our football. What are we going with?
What do you got? What do you got?
Oh, he's back to the expertise.
Expert, right? Okay, because he had a pretty an okay weekend as far as the predictions go. Duke Ellingson joins us this morning. How you doing this morning, Duke?
My head exploded about 9 o'clock last night, so I'm not sure. I just blacked out.
Yeah. Now, for a guy who played the game, has watched the game, analyzed the game, are we over? I feel like I'm overstating it because I've just said it a million times, and but I have said no recency bias. Best weekend of football I've ever seen. So where do you come down on that?
Yeah, you know what? I think that's fair. And it's not necessarily because all the games were as well played as we saw last night or clean or the drama from Saturday afternoon to last night, I mean, you can't ask for anything else. If you're not a fan of any of the teams and you just want to see a great finish, you got literally all walk-off scores to end all the games. And I've never seen that before. So certainly just from a straight dramatic perspective, it was the best weekend I can recall.
Seems like a long time ago, Duke, but just thoughts on Cincinnati being able to take that away and how Tennessee just let one get away.
Oh, my goodness. You know, and I was going to talk about this because I wasn't sure at the end of the weekend what, you know, the main storylines would be. But certainly on Saturday, the games, while they did come down to the last play of the game, they were just, I thought, quite poorly played on both sides of the ball. And Cincinnati, I mean, if somebody would have told you guys that Burrow would get sacked 9 times, which is a playoff record, like you'd have thought the game was a rout and should have been. And yet Ryan Tannehill handed them 3 interceptions in real key situations, and the Titans just literally threw that game away and wasted what I thought was a remarkable effort by that defense.
Does that speak to already the maturity of Joe Burrow and why people think that if he's not already, he's going to be a superstar in that, yeah, he was getting thundered the entire game, but not once did he really put put the ball in harm's way like Tannehill did, right? So there's the thing when you're really young, I'm going to throw this away because I don't want to get sacked. He took the sacks and then rallied his team to score after taking the sacks.
You know, it's a good point, and you know, I think we saw a lot of that during the course of the year, that mental toughness and the physical toughness, because he had, I think he was 3rd in the league in sacks, so he took a ton of hits and just kept bouncing back. And you're right, he didn't panic, he didn't start throwing the ball away, he certainly wasn't, you know, the body language wasn't blaming his offensive linemen, things like that. And there was a couple of series I can recall where they got themselves in 2nd and 3rd and very long, and he knew and he understood well enough that I don't need to get it all back on one play. And a couple times he got them into field goal range by just having that patience to just throw the ball underneath and take what they gave him. But, it was really amazing to see for a kid that young.
I thought the pivotal point of that game, though, was when Tennessee had the 3rd and 1 down at the Cincinnati 20 or whatever it was late in the game. The game, I think, was tied at that point, and they decided to – they have Derrick Henry, and to me, I know he didn't have a great game, but he's still a battering ram, and they decided to run some kind of read option with Tannehill. I know it's easy for us in retrospect to say that, but do you understand when coaches call plays like that?
Well, I'm glad you talked about that, because there's a couple situations over the course of the weekend where I feel like coaches are just trying to show how smart they are, how clever they are, how creative they are, and they don't just do what's best for the team in those cases. And I would agree 100% there. You need to, you know, you need to find a creative way to run the play, but you need to get the ball into your best player's hands in those situations. And I know we can fast forward ahead to the Kansas City game, and I thought the Chiefs, you know, at the end of the day, were very lucky that they didn't lose that game because of the 3rd and 1 trick play they tried with a tight end instead of, you know, the tight end taking a snap rather than putting the ball in the hands of Mahomes. So I agree 100%. I don't understand play callers except that they're trying to flex their muscles and show how smart they are.
Somebody touched on Josh Allen running and how's he going to take all that contact. But let's be honest, 2 years in and Joe Burrow a year ago sacked, ends up, you know, the leg almost snaps off. Are you not asking for some serious trouble if you're Cincinnati after year 2 and seeing how much contact he's taken?
Well, absolutely. Now, it's interesting because at the draft this year, everybody had anticipated that they would take the top tackle in the draft with that pick, and we know what they did with it, and they took a lot of heat for it at the time, but we can see that, you know, they have a plan. But you're right, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how great your receivers are if you can't keep your quarterback standing. So they do need to address that, and, you know, when you play in the playoffs at this level, all of the teams are, especially on defense, they can really bring a lot of heat, and he's going to see that again on Sunday against Kansas City. So I do worry for him, and they do need to address that issue.
Duke Ellingson is our guest. How much blame, what percentage of the 100% blame pie should Aaron Rodgers take for the Packers' loss to San Fran?
Wow. I got to say, you know, 75%, 80%, you are the quarterback, and so you're always going to get the lion's share of the blame, lion's share of the credit. But when you're the MVP of the league and you have, and you certainly can't blame the lack of talent around him because he's got tons of talent. But if somebody would have said to you guys after the first drive of the game that that was the last touchdown they would score in the game, and he had lots of opportunities with the ball in his hand in key situations late in that game and just did not get it done. So that's what you ask your MVP caliber, you know, generational talent quarterback to do into those situations, and he didn't get it done. So despite the special teams woes and all that happened in that game, you know, it certainly lands on him for not getting it done at the end.
Is there something different that he does, Duke, or is this just kind of the accumulation now over a number of years where he hasn't been able to, just hasn't started well out of the gate come playoff?
Yeah, you know, you wonder. He certainly likes to put on the show that nothing bothers him and he's supremely confident. But you have to wonder, at some level, is it in the back of his mind about the pressure, constantly getting home playoff games, constantly getting byes, constantly being put in great situations. Sometimes they, you know, the bad weather is to their benefit, and yet he just can't seem to get over that hump. So you wonder about that, and you wonder how much it has played in over the last couple of years. Because let's face it, I mean, with him at the position and having the talent that he's had around him over the years, I just don't. It's hard to imagine that they've only been only won one Super Bowl.
Blocked field goal, blocked punt for a touchdown in the last 5 minutes of the game. Not having enough players on the field on the game-winning field goal. How is it possible that the Green Bay Packers special teams is that bad? And apparently, it has been bad all year. Like, this is not just a kind of a one-off terrible game. This has been the entire season. It's been like this.
Yeah, I don't have an answer to that. I heard this morning that they were the first team in the NFL history, since they've been keeping these stats, that was the number one seed with the 32nd ranked special teams unit across the board. So it's just unfathomable that you can't be prepared in those situations. And I thought a really good example of the lack of awareness and preparedness was when the 49ers really needed a lift in the second half and they put Deebo Samuel back to return the kick. And it was like the Packers didn't even realize he was back there and just kicked it to him. And he ran it back by 45 yards. So, yeah, I mean, if that guy hasn't been fired yet, he's going to be. But, yeah, I have no answer for a team. I mean, that's your only role as a special teams coach, and you got a certain group of guys that do nothing but play special teams, and you have all week to prepare, and you just, it's a wonder that those things can happen. And I don't think San Francisco was even trying to block the punt. It was just poor technique on the Packers side.
If you're a Rams fan, glass half full or glass half empty?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to know, but that you know, you go back a couple of weeks ago, they had a similar situation when they were playing San Francisco, ironically, and they were up at the end of the first half, I think 17-0 in total control, and they managed to find a way to lose that game. And yesterday, I mean, they literally fumbled it away, starting with that late fumble at the end of the first half, and then what they did in the second half and let Tampa Bay back in a game they had no business being in. But I think you've got to be really happy with the fact that they can play such great defense and bring such great pressure up front. That's going to be a problem on Sunday for San Francisco. And Matt Stafford, for the most part, I thought played really well. You can't blame him on the fumbles. And then he made a play at the end, although I will never understand, speaking of coaches trying to outsmart themselves, why Todd Bowles would bring a cover zero blitz in that last situation.
Yeah, that on the long pass to Cooper Kupp, which set up the field goal. Yeah, for sure. All right, let's end, because we want to spend some time on that Kansas City Buffalo game, because there's just so many different ways we can attack this game from. But three touchdowns and a field goal inside of the final 2 minutes. Do you have a memory of anything like that before?
No, I mean, if you think back to the Kansas City-New England game a couple of years ago in the AFC Championship game, there was a bunch of trading points down the stretch. I think maybe there was 17 points scored in the last 3 minutes, something like that, and Kansas City got themselves back into a tie to go to overtime. But no, I've never seen anything like that. And just a testament, again, if you look at the first three games and how scrambly and a bit sloppy they were, that was the total opposite. Quarterbacks playing at as high a level as you're ever going to see, and both of them being able to create plays with their legs, both passing and running, and just making it almost impossible for the other team to stop them. But certainly when Kansas City scored there on the Tyreek Hill, you know, long run, I thought there's no way in the world that the Bills can get back and score again. And they did with relative ease. And at that point, of course, I'm sure all of us thought 13 seconds. It's ironic, isn't it, guys, that last week we learned that 13 seconds wasn't quite enough. The Dallas Cowboys needed it to get a shot at the end zone, but it was exactly enough time for Patrick Mahomes. Now, having three timeouts certainly helped, but that was just an unbelievable, the last flurry of plays. And you knew when the coin flipped, whichever way it went, you knew it was only going to be a one possession overtime.
13 seconds left. First of all, thoughts on the kick itself, mm-hmm. and then just on what Buffalo could have done different defensively.
Well, for sure the kick, and you know, I was kind of enthralled in the game and wasn't really thinking so much about strategy, but certainly you had to think that a kick, not a squib kick in the sense of kicking it short, but just kicking it so that it didn't get to the end zone, would force Kansas City to have to return it. Now, you know, small risk, they could bust a decent return, but they would eat up at least 6 seconds, 7 seconds, and that would leave Kansas City with one play, and even with the timeout, they wouldn't have been able to do anything. So that was a huge mistake. And on the other side, with the last two plays, I mean, you knew two things, that in order for them to get down the field in two shots, the plays had to come off quickly. So I would have suggested maybe they tried to jam a couple of guys at the line of scrimmage just so the timing wasn't there, so that Mahomes couldn't release the ball immediately, because even 2 or 3 seconds of holding the ball or taking a second look for another guy would have eaten up enough time they could have won the game. So I didn't like the fact that they played sort of so soft and let them have free releases off the line of scrimmage.
In a case like that, and I know that you weren't a fan of the way Tampa Bay did it and blitzed in the situation mm-hmm. they were, but in a way, in allowing Patrick Mahomes to kind of survey the entire, you know, he doesn't have a ton of time, but he can yep. survey the field, right? Mm-hmm. He's got time because you're playing a prevent defense. Is there a sort of an in-between, Duke, and I don't know what it is, using a late blitz or something like that, that forces the quarterback to get uncomfortable and not allow him to have the time that Mahomes ended up having?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are many ways to do it, and you can blitz without putting yourself in a vulnerable position in the back end. But what you needed to do was have him not be able to just take, because he needed to take the snap literally and know where he was going with the ball and have somebody available to throw to. So I would have gotten a couple of guys at the line of scrimmage to just redirect and make that quick throw, just a bit more hesitation. You can blitz multiple guys and still be safe in the back end, but I think they just kind of gave up too much room. And they allowed Mahomes to make that initial quick throw both times. And the second one maybe was even more egregious, because at that point you knew that, you know, 15, 20 yards was going to get him in field position or field goal position. And I thought they just played really, really soft.
As you said, it seemed like a fait accompli that whoever won the coin toss was going to win the game. And that's exactly how it played itself out. So the great debate that's out there last night and now this morning is the NFL overtime rule fair? If it's not, how should it be adjusted? Where do you come down on that?
Well, I've kind of been a bit more on the, I mean, about 5 years ago, I think maybe it was more than that now, but they did move away from the field goal would win it. Now they made teams on the first possession at least score a touchdown. But, you know, I think as offenses get better and better, and what you saw last night was not just that Mahomes and Allen were in such a zone, but the defenses were gassed on both sides of the ball. So, you know, I do think if you want ultimate justice or fairness or equity, you both teams should have a chance to possess the ball regardless of the score that comes before. So I would like to see them make that adjustment to let both teams have a possession. However, I'm a big fan. I don't know about you guys. I'm a big fan of the CFL and the NCAA approach, which is very fair. Both teams get possessions. They can start. You don't have to start them from the 25. You can start it from midfield. But I like the idea of both teams getting the ball, and I like the idea of the drama that comes when you start with an opportunity to put points on the board on every drive.
Yeah, see that's what I'm a fan of the concept of both teams getting the ball. I'm mm-hmm. not a fan of them getting it already in a scoring position.
Right.
Like, I think you should have to do something, and whether it's midfield yep. or your own 40. But to the point of, and I believe the reason that the rule is in place in the first place is for the safety of the players, right? That at the end mm-hmm. of a long game, that the possibility of a serious injury kind of, you know, grows and grows yep. as a game goes on. And people scoff at that and go, well, the game is already violent enough and they play an extra game, so that's really not that important. Is that, as a guy who played the game, is that truth, that the possibility of serious injury increases as the more fatigue the athletes get?
Well, I mean, I think scientifically, I don't have any data to back it up, but it makes a lot of sense to me. It is a little bit hard to stomach that reason when, you know, as you just pointed out, the NFL seems to have no problem playing 17 games, seems to have no problem adding an extra playoff game, and has no problem with Thursday night games. So to put player safety as the main reason for that is a bit hypocritical. But no, I do get it and I do understand it. It's just that, you know, in the regular season, they shave the overtime down to 10 minutes for that same reason, JR, to try to limit the extra number of plays. But when you're in a playoff game, and maybe that's what they do in the playoffs, maybe you change the rule to because it really is unfair when it's winner go home in that situation. So maybe regular season you can keep what you're doing, but playoffs it should be equal possessions so that at the end of the day both teams have that opportunity.
All right, we'll have you back on Friday for a preview of the conference championships, but one of the things we sort of branched off on in a discussion point this morning is the number of great young quarterbacks that are in the AFC in particular. Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, when and if he comes back, Deshaun Watson, and then maybe a slight tier below at this stage is Justin Herbert, though people think he jumps on the list. Lamar Jackson, Trevor Lawrence, perhaps, and then there's even some decent younger quarterbacks, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, and maybe Tua, that we'll see what they become. In the NFC, it's kind of a lot of older guys that are more near the end, and then you got kind of Dak that's in the middle.
Yeah.
How do you see this playing out in terms of the AFC, the struggle over the next 5 to 10 years with all these great young quarterbacks?
It really is. When you name them like that, it's really noticeable what the difference between the two conferences. And I was thinking about this morning because there was a couple of articles about various coaching open vacancies in the AFC. And I was thinking about if I was a guy looking for a job and I didn't have one of those guys as my quarterback, maybe I'd go lean on the NFC and go find a team over there that wants me. But no, it's really something. And it bodes well, obviously, for the league and for the conference. It's going to be, you know, people talk about, well, Mahomes and Allen will play each other, you know, 10 more times in conference championships. We all know how hard it is to get there, how injuries can play a role, and just, you know, blind luck. And so the great thing is, if you're a fan of football, in the AFC especially, you know you're going to get quality quarterback play. And the way the game has been kind of evolved, without that, you really don't have a chance. So it's going to be a lot of fun to be a fan of the AFC in the next 5 years.
Yeah, to me, you feel down if you're a Browns fan and understand for the Steelers what you have to go and find. Just thoughts, Duke, on how do you think this is going to play out with Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, you know what? I think if I was Green Bay after all that's happened and the fact that they're still in pretty good position with their talent base, I would, if Rodgers makes any more noise, I'd just move on from him. That's the way I would handle it. With Tom Brady, I mean, he's always said that he will know when it's time to retire, and that's when he can't play at the level that he expects of himself, but I don't think that's the case right now. So, you know, it'll take a few days, maybe weeks for him to figure that out, but I don't think he will retire. And I'll throw this one out, guys. I'm not so sure that he won't be a member of the San Francisco 49ers next year.
Hmm.
Just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, some people have raised that possibility, so yeah. That would be, you'd be walking into a ready-made contender, right? That's really just a quarterback short. So, and that's that's his home area, right, where he grew up as well.
Yep.
All right, good stuff. As always, Duke, appreciate the time and the insight, and we'll reconvene with you on Friday to hopefully preview what will be two great conference championship games. Thanks for the time this morning.
Looking forward to it, guys. Take care.